creating cultural awareness and understanding. This is Culture Click. Culture Click is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University.
On this episode of Culture Click, we bring you the first in our Healthy Living Series partnership with the Winona Daily News. You will hear from local health professionals on a variety of topics that aim to help the listener make educated decisions on how to live a wholesome and nourishing lifestyle. Today, we tackle whether or not BMI is an accurate tool for gauging health, if obesity should be considered an epidemic, and what does it exactly mean to be healthy?
A fit, obese person has a lot less risk of disease compared to the normal weight, unfit person.
I'm Terry Tensett, and you're listening to Culture Click and the Healthy Living Series. Good afternoon. You are joining us for our collaborative effort with the Winona Daily News' Healthy Living Series. I'm Terry Tensett, Program Director for KQAL. We're going to have our guests go ahead and introduce themselves. First, over to my right,
Jennifer Holden with the Winona Hy-Vee, the dietitian there.
Rebecca Wolf, nurse practitioner in Winona Health, Occupational Health and Wellness.
Marcia Ratliff, health and wellness reporter at the Winona Daily News.
And Kent Hansen, I teach exercise science and nutrition courses here at Winona State.
We're going to have a panel discussion today that's really low-key about what is the picture of health. And to start off, what do each of you define as being healthy? What is being healthy?
I define it as a lack of disease or symptoms of conditions, disease, condition like anemia, et cetera, or something more significant like a disease. I keep it pretty simple.
And I look at a few more aspects of healthy, not only the physical, but your emotional, social, spiritual, occupational, where are you satisfied with all aspects of your lifestyle?
I definitely agree with Rebecca on that, your overall health, how you feel about your life, just having a good relationship with you and your body.
Now, there are certain measurements of health that are put out by different organizations, and one that's been a reoccurring in discussion
right.
Between Marcia and I, if you want to go into that.
Yeah. So we wanted to talk about the BMI or body mass index, because that's a common indicator that insurance companies, doctors, you name it, a lot of people use it to measure how healthy a person is. And we wanted to discuss what a BMI is and how reliable of a measurement is it.
Well, I think that the body mass index is a good place to start. I don't think it's the only thing to look at. I mean, if you have somebody who has a body mass index of 50, definitely then if you're looking at the physical, there's definitely changes that can be made. However, some of the cutoffs for what's normal, if somebody's very muscular or their build is a broader build, I don't think it's an accurate description, but I think it's something that shouldn't be ignored, and it's a really good place to kind of start your discussion about the physical.
I definitely agree. It's nice for an assessment. It gives us an idea of where that person's at, but it only looks at your weight versus your height, and there's a lot of other stuff that goes into whether or not that person is healthy at that weight and that height.
In the long run, what would be a better indicator of health for health insurance companies to go by?
That's the hard part about if you're looking at the physical and the overall picture of medical. Not one person really can fit the exact same mold. And I think so often we try to get everybody to fit this one clinical picture and say, your numbers don't fit this. Therefore, no matter if you're 14 or you're 88, you're unhealthy. So I think that definitely, I don't know the true answer to that, but we need to try to somehow individualize what the insurance companies are looking at based on each person.
An example would be in a recent study, they looked at people's response to the same amount of carbohydrate. And they saw that even though these individuals have no overt symptoms for disease or any conditions, they all responded with a different hyperglycemic event, which means that elicited a different insulin response. And so that's an example of the typical healthy person or a group of them responding differently to an average or not an abnormal meal, and how they respond to it so differently across the range.
Now, in your classes, Kent, you talk about the importance of individualization and how
with you talking about carbohydrates, how everybody kind of responds differently. So you kind of have to find a balance that works for people.
Correct.
And with the insulin response, that's kind of interesting. Some people can have a diet a certain way and it doesn't affect them whatsoever. And then other people, it will make them gain weight like crazy or make them lose weight like crazy.
Or even just gain weight or lose weight. Not even, it doesn't have to be a like crazy. It just, these foods and the macronutrient mixes affect people differently in this post carbohydrate meal with insulin and hyperglycemic events is just an example of how everyone is or reacts differently with their physiology.
That makes it hard to prescribe a healthy plan for people. And Jennifer, you see a wide range of people. How do you guide them towards being healthy?
Baby steps at a time. Kind of like we've been talking about, we need to individualize it and see what's realistic for each person to make healthier habits.
And I think in my previous job, I did endocrine, so I did a lot with like carbohydrates. So if we're sticking on the same discussion, before you can necessarily start saying this is what you need to do in your lifestyle, you need to try to gather what is the patient able to do and what do they want to do. It may be that they have, you know, an underlying mental health disorder that they need to overcome before they can start to change their eating habits to become what society always calls healthy.
Oh, that's interesting, because you have to be ready for the change. Mm-hmm. Mental health issues can control how your body responds to things, mm-hmm. correct?
Correct.
In what I teach, to expand on this, I talk a lot about nutrient density. And in class, we describe that, and it's really trying to maximize the good nutrients, which includes fiber, protein, and the micronutrients, over calories. So how many of those good nutrients per calorie are you getting from any individual food? And when you broaden that term to cover your whole diet and you try to tell people, try to maximize nutrient density of your diet, then you're not having to necessarily follow how many carbs I'm taking in starches or sugars. Every time you make a food choice, if you're using nutrient density or the idea of it as part of the factors that go into you making a food choice, you're going to have a healthier diet than a diet that is less healthy. And so I like using that term and that thought process with the students to try to develop a healthy diet without getting inundated with all the details and caught up with calorie counting and this and that. Right. So that is an approach that I've used that still allows people flexibility for individuality, but you're still trying to maximize those nutrients that are healthier for you rather than the empty calorie kinds of nutrients like fats and starches and sugars.
Well, an example would be like choosing healthy fats, avocado, over something else, you know, like going towards the healthier side of that.
Or choosing a healthier preparation method of fish or chicken or something, because once you fry something, you're adding just calories essentially to that food, and so you're decreasing the nutrient density of that food.
That's a good example.
As an example.
Obesity is a word that's thrown around a lot, especially with BMI. There's different levels coming back to that. If you're at a certain percentage, you're considered obese or overweight or within the norm or a certain percentile. Would you consider obesity an epidemic?
I would say yeah. If you look at our population in general, it's a diagnosis. It's not a stereotype. It's a diagnosis. And so many people have a hard time realizing that it is truly a diagnosis. But it is a diagnosis, and they're starting to be diagnosed much younger in children and throughout the lifespan. So I would say in the United States, it definitely is an epidemic.
To go along with that, I did do a little bit of research with the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. And with that, it said that 1/3 of the United States is obese. That equals 78.6 million people. And also obesity-related conditions include heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes. Like, there's a lot of issues that come along with that. What I really thought was eye-opening, along with what they had to say with obesity, is each person medically, it costs $1,429 more for somebody that's obese per year in medical costs than someone with a normal weight. You know, looking at those numbers, too, shows that because of their higher weight, it's costing more in medical conditions. It's kind of another way to look at it.
Yeah, and I've been reporting on this all year as part of the Daily News' ongoing Healthy Living series, and I used some of those statistics, but I kind of felt strange about that because the obesity statistics are based on BMI.
Right, that's where
it comes
back to.
And so when you're reporting that 2/3 of American adults are obese or overweight, and it's based on a measurement which is kind of just a starting point, I don't know what to do with that, if anybody could respond.
I think one example, too, is like I do a lot of Department of Transportation physicals, and they're really taking into the account that their drivers are heavier as well as at risk for sleep apnea, which is also often related to a person's body weight. But they use the BMI as part of it, but you also look at a person's neck circumference and how wide open can they open their throat, something called a Mellon body score. So despite that, you know, they're based off of the BMI, I think it's a simple standard measure, and so often we need a standard when we're directing studies, but I think often other areas are starting to look at other sorts of measures.
I think we can all agree that the BMI has error in it. Mm-hmm. So let's say that there's error in it, and the 2/3 of the population are overweight or obese. If we bring that back, given some error, is 50% of the population, while less severe, isn't that still a problem? So even though the BMI might be not the best individual indicator rather than a population indicator of overweightness or obesity, taking away some of that, granting the error, there's still a lot of people. And then the health impact of excess body fat and the dollars associated with it become a more societal problem at that point.
I want to bring up an example. There are some people that are clinically described as obese or overweight. Let's say their health insurance company is like, well, your BMI is this high, you're not living a healthy lifestyle, yet they're very active, their cardiovascular is up, and they're doing everything healthy. So how would you measure somebody's health that is in that category?
As far as for the insurance company question, I think a lot of that has, like, most often providers are the ones who are filling out the paperwork and doing the person's physical. I think it's important. I mean, yeah, the BMI is also in there, but part of your physical is also a social history and a lifestyle history. I mean, we can't tell anybody what their final decision is going to be, but making sure that you do document as far as if you feel this person is healthy. But as far as insurance companies go, with what their guidelines are, unfortunately, are somewhat out of our hands, which is a hard issue.
Some possibilities would include those diseases that have the closest tie to excess body fat. So cardiovascular diseases, type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome. So if you take some measurements that would give an indication of those, so, you know, glucose levels immediately after glucose tolerance test, fasting glucose, hypertension, blood pressure. Those are some parameters that would indicate health based on those conditions or diseases that are intimately tied to excess body fat rather than not all cancers are related that well to excess body fat. So you could devise a scheme based on those diseases or conditions that are most closely associated with excess body fat. You know, it wouldn't even take that many.
And a lot of insurance companies require that you should have some of those labs completed, like your cholesterol, your fasting glucose, sent with, so they have if they review them, they would have a baseline.
Well, this has been interesting. If anybody has any final thoughts to wrap up on what you believe the entire picture of health is.
Yeah, it'd be good if we could return to that.
Yeah, if we could return to that, because that's the overall theme. If you have any closing thoughts on that, please give those.
So there's an interesting concept out there, and sometimes it's coined fitness versus fatness, and which is the overriding principle in terms of health. So if you have a genetic predisposition towards just being that bigger person and having more body fat, then we all know that really thin person who can eat anything and stay thin. So if your genetic predisposition is causing you to have more body fat, not necessarily by lifestyle, but just because of genetics, is there any hope for you, or are you destined to have these diseases and possibly early death? And some studies have shown that fitness overrides that. So Stephen Blair, out of then the Pennington Institute did a study and looked at fitness level and what it did to the incident of disease and early death. And it showed that a fit obese person, and the definition of fit is a bit ambiguous and not a real good definition, but the fitter you are, the more your increased risk of disease does not increase that much compared to a fit normal weight or fit healthy body fat person. And in fact, a fit obese person has a lot less risk of disease compared to the normal weight unfit person. So what is the overriding principle, fitness or fatness, in terms of a health factor? And it's fitness that can override the fatness. And even in the normal or healthy body fat person, you see a large difference between disease risk and a risk of early death in that healthy person if you're unfit compared to fit. So there's some intriguing evidence. Where it falls apart is with extreme obesity. That paradigm or that thought doesn't hold up on the extreme ends of the BMI spectrum. So it's interesting. What provides the best indicator of health? It's not necessarily where your body fat is. It's getting that endurance exercise, and that is a huge factor in terms of health and what it can override in terms of what the excess body fat brings to the table.
Excellent. Anybody have anything else to add?
I can't follow up that well. But like I said, when I first started, health is so many different avenues besides just being physically fit. And I think that's something that we as society all need to realize. It's not an excuse, but is there something that we can do to try to help the person overcome things? Many people who are depressed, they use food as a coping mechanism. They eat. And then before you know it, now that we're overweight and obese, now we have diabetes, now we have hypertension. So by saying, okay, we're going to put you on a pill to take care of this, and now you need to start exercising 30 minutes, 5 days a week, and we should see you back to where, hopefully get back to where you're at. We need to make sure we're treating an underlying issue and kind of helping the patient or the person be able to become a healthy person in all avenues of life, physical, spiritual, mental, you know, even with your own work. So I also think because I am a nurse practitioner, that not always just saying that putting the person on the pill is going to take care of the issues, that there might be another issue. And to try to tell somebody right away off the bat, go work out for 30 minutes a day, it can be daunting. So if somebody can start walking 10 minutes once a day, it's huge.
Whether you're overweight or just underactive.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I always think of, when I tell my patients, think of who you want to be, not what you want.
Jennifer, you have any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I think we're closing up with some really great points. I agree 100%. The overall health is very important. Like Kent mentioned, physical activity is very important, but that's harder to measure than a body mass index. So that's why we kind of tend to look at that body mass index and obesity, because those are easy to measure, inexpensive. You just need your weight and your height. You don't need any special tools. Anybody can figure it out. However, there are a lot of factors that we overlook, and that's why we discuss that. Individualism is so important to figure out what those barriers are and what's causing people to have issues that are adding up to these huger problems that we're concerned with.
Great. Thank you all for your input. I hope you'll join us next time. We're going to talk about body image issues and orthorexia and a whole bunch of fun stuff. So hopefully you'll join us again. Thank you.
A special thanks goes out to Marcia Ratliff and the Winona Daily News for partnering with KQAL in the Healthy Living series. We would also like to thank today's panel, Kent Hansen, Assistant Professor of Health, Exercise, and Rehabilitative Sciences at Winona State University, Rebecca Wolf, Certified Nurse Practitioner in Occupational Health from Winona Health, and Jennifer Holden, Registered Dietitian with Winona Hy-Vee. We hope that you will join us for the next episode in our Healthy Living series, when we tackle body image issues, orthorexia, and more. I'm Terry Tensett, and you've been listening to Culture Click.
Creating cultural awareness and understanding. You've been listening to Culture Click. Support for Culture Click is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Culture Click is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information, look us up on the web at kqal.org. And thanks for listening to Culture Click.